The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 2, text number 13. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari. Recorded on June 27th, 2011, in Sydney, Australia.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Dehi nosmin yata dehe. Kumaram jovanam jara, tata dehan tara praptir, dhiras tatra namuhiyati. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. Purport. Since every living entity is an individual soul, each is changing his body at every moment, manifesting sometimes as a child, sometimes as a youth, and sometimes as an old man. Yet the same spirit soul is there and does not undergo any change. This individual soul finally changes the body at death and transmigrates to another body. And since it is sure to have another body in the next birth, either material or spiritual, there was no cause for lamentation by Arjuna on account of death, neither for Bhishma nor for Drona, for whom he was so much concerned. Rather, he should rejoice for their changing bodies from old to new ones, thereby rejuvenating their energy. Such changes of body account for varieties of enjoyment or suffering, according to one's work in life. So, Bhishma and Drona, being noble souls, were surely going to have spiritual bodies in the next life, or at least life in heavenly bodies for superior enjoyment of material existence. So in either case, there was no cause for lamentation. Any man who has perfect knowledge of the constitution of the individual soul, the super soul, and nature, both material and spiritual, is called a dhira, or a most sober man. Such a man is never deluded by the change of bodies. The Mayavadi theory of oneness of the spirit soul cannot be entertained on the ground that the spirit soul cannot be cut into pieces as a fragmental portion. Such cutting into different individual souls would make the Supreme cleavable or changeable, against the principle of the Supreme souls being unchangeable. As confirmed in the Gita, the fragmental portions of the Supreme exist eternally, sanatana, and are called chada. That is, they have a tendency to fall down into material nature. These fragmental portions are eternally so, and even after liberation, the individual soul remains the same, fragmental. But once liberated, he lives an eternal life in bliss and knowledge with the personality of Godhead. The theory of reflection can be applied to the supersoul, who is present in each and every individual body and is known as the Paramatma. He is different from the individual living entity. When the sky is reflected in the water, the reflections represent both the sun and the moon and the stars also. The stars can be compared to the living entities, and the sun or the moon to the Supreme Lord. The individual fragmental spirit soul is represented by Arjuna, and the Supreme Soul is the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. They are not on the same level, as it will be apparent in the beginning in the fourth chapter. If Arjuna is on the same level with Krishna, and Krishna is not superior to Arjuna, then their relationship of instructor and instructed becomes meaningless. If both of them are deluded by the illusory energy, Maya, there is no need of one being the instructor and the other the instructed. Such instruction would be useless because in the clutches of Maya, no one can be an authoritative instructor. Under the circumstances, it is admitted that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord, superior in position to the living entity Arjuna, who is a forgotten soul deluded by Maya. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sivishakan Vitamscha. This is a very important verse in understanding the Bhagavad Gita, because this verse helps us to understand how we are not the body. If you want to actually become spiritually enlightened, if you actually want to connect with your real identity and get free from all the suffering of material existence, the first thing you have to do is you have to understand that you're not your body. As long as you're connected with your body, of course, we are connected, like the driver is connected with the car when he sits in it to drive it. But it's not a permanent connection. I mean, you're sitting there holding the steering wheel, you're sitting in the driver's seat, you're putting your foot on the brake or the gas pedal, you are connected with the car. But you're only temporarily connected there. You're not permanently welded to the car. You can stop a car and get out, you see. So right now, you are connected with your body, just like the driver with the car, but you can get out of that body also, and you still exist. You don't depend on that body for your existence. You see, we are taught that when the body is dead, you're dead. That's a material philosophy. It's like Prabhupada, he was meeting with one Indology professor in Moscow, Dr. Katosky. And Dr. Katosky, he said to Prabhupada, he said, Swamiji, when this body is finished, everything is finished. So that is materialistic philosophy. That is the atheistic viewpoint, which is becoming more and more accepted on this planet by the human society. But it's not a very, if you analyze it in depth, it's a very unsound philosophy. The theistic viewpoint that we actually are spiritual beings makes more sense if you start thinking about it deeply. It makes a lot more sense. And this is one Krishna is helping us to analyze it. Your body is going, you're going through so many changes of body, from boyhood to youth to old age. Just like at one point you have a little baby's body, you see. A little tiny kid, you know, in diapers, you know, screaming and crying and all that. And then you become a little boy, a teenager, a youth, a middle-aged, old man. So many changes of body you're going through. But I can remember when I was a little kid, when I was like 3 or 4 years old, I can still remember things that happened to me, and I did. Not so many, but a few things. I still remember, you see. But where are the chemicals that made up the molecules that constituted that little kid's body? Where are they? They're long gone. They're not here. But yet I have a remembrance of that experience as a little tiny kid. I actually went out to explore the neighborhood one day, just kind of headed out the front door. I was walking down the railroad track, you imagine. I didn't know what a railroad track meant, but luckily no train came. You know, I could have been run over or hit by the train. I was walking down the train track just to explore the world. And after a while, I got tired of exploring the world. I turned around and went back to my house. My mother was so relieved. She didn't know where I had gone. Her little baby child disappeared, you see. And then he came back. Oh, she was so relieved. She had no idea what had happened to me, you see. I went out to explore the world, you know, a little 3-year-old kid or whatever it was. Maybe 4. But so I can remember that day, you see. But where are the molecules that make up that little kid's body who went out to explore the world for the first time? Where are those molecules? They're long gone. So the self that's seated within the body remains the same, but the body changes. That's the point of this verse. So then it's very easy to understand that the self and the body are two different things. You see? It's very simple because I've gone through from boyhood to youth to old age, the body is changing. So this brings in another point. Another philosophical point. It's called the law of momentum. What is in motion tends to stay in motion. So there is a motion going on here of changing bodies, boyhood to youth to old age. According to the law of momentum, the law of motion, since you've been changing bodies all along, you're going to continue changing bodies. Is it? Even after leaving this body, according to the law of momentum, I've changed this body. The momentum is you'll get another body then after that. That's the law of momentum. And that has to also be confirmed in the Vedic wisdom. You get another body. You've been changing body at every second. Every second you're changing. Actually, the body you have now, at this minute, is not the same body you have when you walked in the door a few minutes ago. Because at every moment, the old blood corpuscles are dying, and new blood corpuscles are taking their place. And actually, we're switching. That's another kind of eerie point, but we're actually switching molecules with each other, just sitting here in the same room, you know. We're exhaling and inhaling. We're putting our molecules out there, and somebody else is inhaling them. We're actually switching molecules with each other, just sitting here in the same room. You know, what was part of your body when you came in, now it's part of my body and vice versa. I mean, it's pretty eerie, but that's what's happening, you see. And of course, when you eat, you're taking in so many molecules. You go to the bathroom, you're giving up so many molecules. So, you know, it's a constant flux. So who are you? What are you? You know, consider this, it's like, I don't know the rivers here, but in the U.S. we have the Mississippi River, a big, huge river that goes south into the Gulf of Mexico. Now, if I'm standing on the bank, and there's two big rivers that flow into it also, the Missouri River and the Ohio River, they flow into it, and they become the Mississippi at a certain point. Now, if I'm standing on the bank of the Mississippi River, watching that river flow by, you see, and I pick up some water in my hand, now, is that Mississippi River water? Sure it is. Of course it's Mississippi River. It's picked up out of the Mississippi River. It's Mississippi River water. But those water molecules 3 days ago, those specific water molecules, I can isolate them in a microscope. If you could trace those specific water molecules back a few days ago, that was Missouri River water or Ohio River water. But now I'm calling it Mississippi. You understand? In a couple of weeks more, it's going to be called Gulf of Mexico. It's the same exact water molecule, simply in a different place, and it's called, it has a whole new designation. So your body is the same thing as those water molecules. This is just a flow of molecules that's gravitating around the Atma right now. That's all it is. There's a flow of molecules going on right now, and it's just gravitating around the Atma, which is the individual, the spiritual spark, is attracting these molecules that are called the body. And they're constantly flowing, just like the Mississippi River is constantly flowing. So you can't pinpoint this down as being a Mississippi River molecule. It appears to be Mississippi right now. So you can't, in the same way that molecule, you can't say absolutely it is Mississippi River. It's not. In the same sense, that body is not you. You see, it's not you. It just happens to be in this, the Atma is kind of like a river bed through which the molecules are flowing right now, in a rough analogy. So we call it Mississippi River because it's in the Mississippi, the molecules are flowing through the Mississippi River bed. So we call it you because it's clustered around your Atma right now. Those molecules are clustered around your Atma right now, but they're constantly flowing. Those molecules are clustered around your Atma right now. You see? So in this way, we have to, you know, scientifically analyze, you know, what is the self? Are your eyes seeing? Or are you seeing through your eyes? Think about it. Are your ears hearing? Or are you hearing through your ears? What is that body and what are you? You see, we're programmed from the very minute we come out of our mother's womb to think we're the body. We came out of the mother's womb and they're going, oh, it's a boy. Oh, it's a girl. We're programmed from the very beginning. We're conditioned. We're brainwashed into thinking that we're these bodies. From the very minute we come out of the womb. Very minute. As soon as the family gathers around to see the new baby, immediately you're being programmed to think that you're your body. You see, we've been very heavily brainwashed into thinking that we're these bodies. You see, heavy brainwashing job. So Krishna consciousness is a decondition, is a process of freeing you from the brainwashing that you've undergone for your whole life until you came here. We clean out all the brainwashing and help you get back to your original pure identity. That's what we're doing here. We're not imposing anything on you. We're getting you free from the brainwashing. That's it. In the last line of the Dhiras Chatra Namuyati, the sober person is not devoted by such a change. One who identifies with a body, he's in great anxiety. Oh no, I'm getting old. Oh no, I'm going deaf. Oh no, I'm getting arthritis. Oh no, I'm getting knee pain. Oh no. Oh, it's so devoted. Oh no, I'm dying. Oh no. I got to do something. Doctor, save me. Give me another year at least, doctor. You see? So much anxiety because he identifies with the body. This body is a losing proposition. No matter what you do, I don't care how rich you are, how famous, how powerful you are, I don't care how many doctors, highest paid doctors in the world you can afford, you're going to get sick and old and die. I don't care if you're Bill Gates or Paul McCartney. You're going to get sick and you're going to get old and you're going to die. That's a bit. Everyone. You see. You can't do anything to stop it. So as long as you think that you're that body, you're going to be bewildered. Well, I could say, well, why should I be bewildered? Because, you know, why should I become? Because you're not, if you were that body, it wouldn't bewilder you. It would be a natural thing to get sick and old and die. It wouldn't bewilder you. Because you're not the body, and your nature is eternally youthful, who never gets old, who never gets sick, and never dies. That's your actual identity, because actually that is your real identity. You're not happy when you get sick. You find it to be a disturbance when you get old, when you get sick and you die. That's another proof that you're not your body. If you were your body, then what's the big deal? If I'm just a bag of chemicals, then what difference does it make? You see? If some scientist says, oh, it's just a bag of chemicals, and say, well, Dr. Jones, I have some bad news for you. Your daughter just got run over by a car. She was killed today in it. Your little daughter, baby daughter, little daughter was playing ball on the street and she got hit by a car and she was killed. Well, don't worry, it was just a bag of chemicals. Let's see how much he really believes it's just a bag of chemicals. His daughter was just run over by a car. It's not just a bag of chemicals. It was, then why would you worry about it? Oh, my arm got cut off. Oh, it's just some chemicals. Who cares? You see? Well, the fact is that we are not just a bag of chemicals. We are actually living entities, eternal living beings, qualitatively one with God. He will never get sick, he will never get old, he can never die. So we're not meant to experience these things. It's only because of a false sense of overlordship that we find ourselves in the prison cells of this material existence. These are bodies, are prison cells. We manifested a rebellious nature towards the Supreme, and He's kindly put us in a situation where we can come to our senses and come back to His service and regain our eternal spiritual forms that never get sick, never get old, and never die. So anyway, when is the class supposed to go till? 8:30? Huh?
9?
8:39? It's up to you. It's up to you all, really, your interest. If everybody's falling asleep, then we'll end the class. But if you're if you're enlivened and thrilled to go deeper and deeper into the absolute truth that will liberate you from all your anxieties, then maybe we'll go for a couple more minutes at least. Does anybody have any questions? How about you, David? You have hundreds of questions. You write any of them down and bring them tonight? Huh?
Yeah, I have.
You did?
Sorry?
Did you write your questions down? Last night when we met, I advised you to write them down.
Some of them, but I have to...
Do you bring your paper with you? Did you write them down?
No. I write you by email.
Oh, email, okay. Anybody else have any questions? Are you convinced that you're not your body? That's my question for you now. Are you totally convinced? How about you? Are you convinced you're not your body?
Yes.
Very good. Everybody else is convinced? What about you? Are you convinced that you're not that material body?
Yes.
What makes you so sure? Tell me. Now I'm going to see how much you've understood. Yeah, that's simple. If one can simply take the words of Krishna and believe them, then you've understood. It doesn't mean you have to become a great philosopher. If you can just be a simple devotee and say, well, Krishna says this, so it's true. One can be a great scholar and analyze it from so many angles of logic and this angle and that angle. That's all right too. But even if one simply has faith that Krishna is speaking the truth, and he's saying that the soul continues to exist despite so many changes in body, that person has perfect knowledge, you see. It's like a little child. The father tells him, my little Johnny, 2 + 2 = 4. So he goes to kindergarten, you know, and the teacher says, any of you know anything about mathematics? Little Johnny raises his hand, yes, I know mathematics. The teacher says, what do you know? He says, 2 + 2 = 4. She says, what does that mean? He says, I don't know, but I know it's true. I don't know what it means. I don't know what plus means. I have no idea what plus means or equals, but 2 + 2 = 4. Because he heard it from his father, and he accepted it, and he repeated it. It's perfect knowledge, you see. So even if we don't have deep comprehension of the, you know, so many logical arguments and this and that, if we just think, well, Krishna has said this, that I'm not the body and I change, the soul changes from body to body to body. If I just accept that Krishna said it and therefore it must be true, therefore it is true, that is perfect knowledge, you see. That's perfect knowledge. And then with that perfect knowledge and that faith in the words of Krishna, if one continues to hear from Guru and hear from the scriptures, then you will get deeper and deeper understanding of how it's true. Okay, I accept it. Now, how it's true from many different angles of vision, that will become more and more understood. Just like I've been practicing Krishna consciousness for 40 years now, and I can analyze the difference in my consciousness. I can compare the difference in my consciousness now to where, you know, 40 years ago. It's a huge difference. And anyone who's practicing for some time, they can see a difference between when they started and where they are now, you see. And it just keeps, it's not static, it just keeps becoming, you don't ever stop progressing. There's no limit to how far you can advance and how much deeper you can go in your comprehension of it. So it's a very exciting thing to take this pathway. Because if you're enlivened by what you realize in the beginning, well, just stay on the pathway and you get deeper, you'll get more and more realizations. Prabhupada said how you can read the same verse over and over again, you know, and get newer and newer lights coming out of that same verse. Every time you read it, a new light comes out of it. It's not that there's a limited number of lights in a particular verse, you see. Every single verse of the Bhagavad Gita has unlimited lights within it. And every time you study it, a new light comes out. And you'll never exhaust the supply of lights, even in one verse. That's how powerful this knowledge is. You can study one verse for millions of years and still be getting newer and newer realizations from that one verse. What to speak of, you know, 800 verses or 18,000 verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is the most exciting. If you're interested in spiritual enlightenment and spiritual knowledge, you won't find anything more exciting than this. Because the deeper you go, the more exciting it gets. But the key is you have to practice it. Along with it, you can't just attend the lectures. You have to go to the lab also. I'll give you an example. There was one young man, he had bought a set of Bhagavatams from us, the big, huge set of our Bhagavatam. And he was reading them, and he was just totally in bliss. He said, you know, you should chant Hare Krishna also. Just need to start chanting japa, we told him. He said, no, I just want to read. I don't want to chant. I just want to read. He said, but you really need to, the books are saying you should chant. But no, I just want to, the books are saying to chant. But no, I don't want to do that, I just want to read. You know what happened? He got about halfway through, and he lost his steam. He lost a taste for the knowledge because he was not putting the knowledge into practice. If you're relishing the knowledge, you want to keep going deeper and deeper in the knowledge, you have to start applying the knowledge. Because if you don't apply it, Prabhupada personally told me. He said, knowledge without practice in due course of time becomes dry and useless. So start doing a little, even if it's not a lot of practice, do a little simple practice. Every day, chant on the beads. You see, that's how you practice it. Offer your food to Krishna before you eat, you see. Do some simple practices. You must do practices along with the knowledge because then it quickly elevates you in spiritual realization. If you try to understand chemistry only by attending the lectures but not, without going to the laboratory, you'll never become well-learned in the science of chemistry. But the student who goes to the lectures and goes to the lab and does the experiments in the lab manual, he develops very quickly into a very thorough, complete knowledge of the science of chemistry because he's putting it into practice. So you have to put it into practice. You have to. It's very interesting philosophy, but if you don't practice it, it becomes boring after a while. Because without application, it doesn't, you know, it loses its appeal. That's a fact. When you apply it, then you actually start to experience it. It's not just an idea, it's an experience. That's a big difference. And to have an idea about something and an experience of something, two different things. In the beginning, it's a new idea, it's very intriguing. But if you're not willing to actually experience, do what you need to do to experience it, then just as an idea, it loses its appeal after some time. So one should definitely practice chanting Hare Krishna giving up bad habits, offering your food to Krishna in this way. Treat yourself to an experience of transcendental consciousness. So you can actually experience what you're reading about. We read so many verses. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochati Nakangshati Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Navateparam. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 54. One who is thus transcendentally situated, at once transcends the three modes of material nature and comes to the level of Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He doesn't desire to have anything. He doesn't lament over losing anything. He's equally disposed towards all living entities, and in that state he attains transcendental loving service unto me. So it's a very interesting concept. But if you're actually tasting it, you're actually experiencing Brahma-Bhuta consciousness arising within your heart, then it becomes a million times more interesting. A million times more interesting. So we recommend that everyone apply this also. Well, I'm not totally convinced yet. I don't know if I can really apply it. Well, you don't have to be totally convinced yet. Do it as an experiment. The hippie youth back in the 60s, we tried everything. We tried everything to enjoy life and be happy. We tried everything. I don't want to name all the things we tried. We tried everything. So why not try Krishna consciousness? All right, we'll try this. And it was a million times better than anything else we'd ever experienced. So give this a full try. Give it a full try. You see. Give it a full try. Give Krishna a chance to manifest in your heart. Give him a chance. Because if you follow these guidelines given in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna will manifest in your heart. He will. He'll manifest in your heart. He'll actually come in direct contact with God within your heart. It's the most amazing experience. You come in direct contact with God within your heart by following these guidelines. So any question? Yeah.
Srila Gurudev, how does understanding the self help in understanding the Supreme Self?
How does understanding the self help in understanding the Supreme Self? Well, if you properly understand the self, then you must understand the Supreme Self. Because they exist in relationship. And we had a whole seminar on relationship. The self, the individual self, does not live in a vacuum. He exists by dint of the fact that the Supreme Self is manifesting him as a servant. So if you actually realize who you are, that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, well, guess who you also just realized? You realize Krishna. Self-realization is a word that's very common. So what's the self? It's the individual self and the Supreme Self. One who is fully self-realized realizes the individual self and the Supreme Self simultaneously. There are lower levels of self-realization where they partially realize what the individual self is, but they have no realization of the Supreme Self. That's the impersonalists. They have a partial realization of this individual self. We call that also self-realization, but it's a kindergarten level of self-realization, the impersonalists. Those who are perfect in self-realization, they are the Vaishnavas, the devotees of Allah. They are the perfect self-realized. So. Or as Prabhupada one time said, impersonal realization, that is perfect realization of the Absolute Truth. Paramatma realization is more perfect realization of the Absolute Truth. And Bhagavan realization is most perfect realization of the Absolute Truth. So yes, the impersonalists have perfectly realized the Absolute Truth. And the yogis have more perfectly, and the Vaishnavas has most perfectly realized the Absolute Truth. They're all considered perfect, but there's perfect, more perfect, and most perfect. Any other questions? Yes.
Actually, you mentioned that verse of Brahma Buddha Prasannatma. And also in another verse in the second chapter, Krishna says the Stitha Pragna, one who is transcendentally situated. The 255 verse, which says that.
What's the word?
It's called Stitha Pragna. It says Prajahati Yada Kama, Sarvan Partha.
Stitha Pragna?
Yeah. Is it the same Brahma Buddha?
Yeah, Stitha. Pragya means one who is full of knowledge, and stita means situated. Yeah, yeah.
So, is it the same as Brahma Buddha?
Yeah. To be situated, yes. Of course, Brahma Buddha is a preliminary stage of pure bhakti. So, yeah, they can. Sometimes I'm asked if two words are synonyms, but you know, even in just standard language, you look up, most words have more than one definition. You say, well, are they synonyms? The answer, usually, if you say, are these two words synonyms, the answer is yes and no. In some ways they are, in some ways they aren't. Depends on how you use the word. So I could say the same thing about Brahmabhuta and Stitha Pragya. In some ways, they are synonymous, in some ways, they're not. It depends on how you use them. That's, to be really technically correct, that's the answer. It's a matter of, you know, grammar and word usage. It applies in Sanskrit and English as well. It's the same principle. It depends on how you use it. Because they can be used in different contexts. Any other question?
Thank you so much. Thanks for a nice class. And the question is related to the realizations. Like we have Brahman realization, Paramatma realization, and Bhagavan realization. So the yogi who is Brahman realization, the destination is a Brahman. And for devotee, it is a Bhagavan, which is a spiritual world. So what is the destination of the person who is having a Paramatma realization?
Yeah, he realizes the Paramatma within his heart. And he can go in, at that point, he can go in either one of two directions. He can think that I am one with the Paramatma, I want to merge. Or he can become a devotee of the Paramatma. So, at that point, you can go either way. You can go towards the impersonal way or the personal way. But it means to have full realization of the four-armed form of the Lord seated within one's heart. The yogis can have that vision, that darshan of the Paramatma, actually see him. If they make a mistake, and they go, he's me, and I'm going to merge in and be him now. You see, then they go... Through their yoga, they became impersonalists. They use yoga to merge, to try to merge. Or they can become a devotee of the Paramatma. They can go either way, towards the Vaishnava or the impersonal way. So the best thing is, why better just be a devotee? Instead of spending all the energy to become Paramatma, realize and then be diverted into impersonalism once again. Yeah, that's me. I am the Paramatma, you see. I'm going to merge in and become the Paramatma. Any other questions?
I think what he asked is, he's asking where they will go, what is their destination?
Where do they go?
Yeah.
Depends on if the yogi, the ones who become advanced in the yoga, well, it depends. If they became a devotee of that Paramatma, they could actually qualify to enter the Vaikuntha world as devotees. Or they could merge into the Brahmajyoti temporarily and then fall down again to material existence. It's just the next step from what I answered. Yeah. If you become a devotee of the Lord within your heart as a devotee, then you qualify to enter the Vaikuntha realm. And if you realize ultimately that's Krishna himself in his eternal past, you could actually go to Goloka Vrindavan too. It depends on what sort of rus awakens within your heart. Anyone who becomes a devotee of the Supreme can go to the Vaikuntha, one of the Vaikuntha planets, or go to Golok, depending on the what sort of rasa awakens within his heart. But they will either merge and go into Brahman, or they'll go into the Vaikuntha world if they're perfect in their Paramatma realization. The Paramatma realization, in other words, that will be a stepping stone to go higher to Bhagavan realization, or they go either way. Like I said, they go either way. It can be a stepping stone into Bhagavan realization, or it can be they can reroute it back to the impersonal position. Any other question? Is that clear?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Maharaj, when we feel some pain, so can I say that my body is feeling the pain or I am feeling the pain?
No, you're feeling the pain because you're foolishly misidentifying with your body. The body can't feel anything. Go to a dead body and kick it and see if it feels it. It doesn't feel anything. Only the conscious self can feel. The body doesn't feel anything. It's due to your misidentification with the material body. You're feeling, oh, I am in pain. Now there is your nervous system only registers sensations if there's a living entity in there to experience them. So, but if one is actually fully self-realized, even the pure devotee will feel pain, but he doesn't identify with the pain. That's the difference. He's not disturbed by the pain because he doesn't identify with it. See, actually, pain is just a warning light that something's going wrong. So you have to do. It's like you have your car. You're driving down the. Let's say your oil. You don't have enough oil in your car. There's some leak. What happens? Some warning light comes on in your dashboard. So no, you have to put more oil in the car, otherwise you're going to burn your engine out, you see. So pain is just a warning light. There's something going wrong, you have to adjust it, to fix it. It's just like a red light on your dashboard. Physical pain is just a red light, and the more intense it is, the brighter the red light is, the more urgent the situation is. Pain is simply just a mechanism like the indicators on the dashboard of your car, that's all it is. They protect your body from being harmed. It lets you know when something's malfunctioning so you can do the needful to take care of it. Does that answer your question?
Okay.
Right. Anything else? Okay, well, we thank you all very much for coming tonight. You're the dedicated souls who have braved the evening traffic or whatever it is to get over here. And we're so happy you've come. Thank you so much for coming. To each and every one of you, I'm very grateful that you've come here tonight. And continue this process of Krishna consciousness. Seriously cultivate the pure love of God, which is already there within, but it's simply buried by so many layers of lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. Please chant these holy names as much as possible in kirtan and on the beads. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And your life will be sublime, I guarantee it. And David, here I want to give you this. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.